Renee Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's May.
Good afternoon. It's May Brussel, Carmel, California. It's Monday, August 19th, 1974. I begin by making a few apologies on the program. I haven't had too many to make. Last week, we sent out some tapes to radio stations with blanks on them. The machinery wasn't working in the studio, and we didn't know it. We didn't check them and sent some blanks to some stations, and I send apologies for that. The Realist article is out now that I've been talking about for the last few months that I have worked on and researched for 5 months. We'll mention it briefly. The Realist article is on the kidnapping of Patricia Hearst. It's called Why Was Patricia Hearst Kidnapped? And it's the entire issue of the Realist magazine. I'll give you the address in case you can't get to a bookstore. You can write here to KLRB, Carmel, California, and send 75 cents for the publication and the postage, or you can write to The Realist and subscribe for $3 a year, which is even better, 595 Broadway, New York, 10012. There are local bookstores, San Francisco City Lights in Carmel, the Thunderbird and bookstore, the airport is carrying it, a used bookstore in Watsonville, Capitola, the Aries Arts, and I'll locate other publishers, distributors rather, for you if you want them in your community. The article is the full issue of The Realist. It's 39 pages, but I have an apology. It went out without the footnotes. There were 22 footnotes that were very important to the text, and I feel for research of this kind that it should have a backup material. The numbers are in the article, but it was published. There was a misunderstanding between Paul Krasner and myself, and it went out without these very important footnotes to back up some serious allegations that I made. I'm trying to remedy that by maybe getting them mimeographed here in town or printed fairly inexpensively. And for serious researchers who want to look up these assertions I've made, the sources of the information, in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, send me a self-addressed envelope and maybe 10 cents to help carry the coverage of it. It'll be about 4 pages of footnotes. And if you are serious about getting into the research and want to look up these things, I think that's the only thing we'll be able to do. Paul said about 40,000 have already been printed and are going out. And so this first batch, there's no way we can amend it. I apologize. And in the next issue of The Realist, they'll be printed there, or you'll have to write and send for them. Now that the article is out on the SLA that I've done, the Patricia Hearst story, this month, there's another article in conjunction with it, which helps explain some of the things or points that I'm trying to make in my article, and it's a very important article. It's in Playboy this month, the September 74, and it's called Bringing the War Home by David Rorvik, R-O-R-V-I-K, page 102. It's about a 5-page article, and it's terribly important because the theme of my SLA story is that it's a giant hoax put on by the Central Intelligence Agency, and it's a method of escalating and starting World War III domestically in the United States now that the contracts for Vietnam and the warfare machinery isn't sold overseas in other countries. We're going to turn our country into a warfare state for the purpose of profits. There are many similarities or points in the Playboy article that just came out that I would like to briefly run down that are in my article. One is the assertion in this article by Mr. Rorvik that I make in mind that Vietnam is in your own backyard, that the war is ready to come at home. He brings up the subject of brain implants and transponders, and those of you who listen to my radio show weekly know that I've been talking about the experimentations on the prisoners, the secret operations, the insertion of these little wires that control people electronically, that have no control over their mind or their behavior. The government already talks about 25 million of them to be inserted into men's bodies who are on parole or on bail, that they can't be removed in their program by computers in their emotional life or the geographical distance that they can operate. This article goes into those, and so does mine. This also brings up the point, the Playboy article of Rand Corporation think tank in 1967, beginning the plan for bringing the war home. And that's one of the footnotes that's missing in my article, with the plans of Rand Corporation in California of creating the technology for a police state. Goes into the LEAA that was funded after the Robert Kennedy assassination, because that's when the police state in this country really tightened up. And the article in Playboy mentions a $63 million fund in 69 to start the LEAA, and now it was $1 billion in 74, and that also is in my article. It talks about police academies around the country, police science academies. And I questioned in the SLA article that Tony Shepard at Mel Sporting Goods, who had the handcuffs that he put on Agent Provocateur William Harris that was excused to murder six SLA members, coming from the Los Angeles Police Science Academy. And I believe that the handcuff scene was a staged scene done by the intelligence agency, and that Mr. Shepard possibly came from the police academy. It goes into the equipment, what he calls the prophets of the merchants of death. In the article, he refers to the prophets of the men who make the helicopters and the weapons and the different kinds of chemicals and bullets for controlling people in the United States. There's a quotation, "We have a modest amount of altruism and a lot of interest in profits." That's a quotation from a manufacturer of these weapons. And in the article on the SLA, the very first paragraph, I described the domestic war coming home, and I said the ensuing battle has been carefully prepared and anticipated by the merchants of death. Those are the power makers, the people that make money off of selling these weapons. It also goes into the police budgets in Chicago of $100 million, New York $350 million, and a small Ohio community. I'm quoting now from the Playboy September 74 article that in a small Ohio community received $230 million worth of equipment, helicopters, and tanks. And if you remember, about 3 or 4 weeks ago on KLRB Dialogue Conspiracy, we talked about a new camp that could be an internment camp opening up at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base outside of Dayton, Ohio, under the Defense Electronic Supply Company. And it's called Operation PEIC, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, if you want to write to your congressman. And I wonder if that $230 million is in a community. It doesn't say which Ohio community, and I'll write to this particular author, David Rorvik. But is it anywhere near where this new concentration camp base is being built, to keep the people, the population, flowing into this particular Air Force base that's being refurbished? The article goes into computerized surveillance, a $3.225 billion battlefield along the Mexican border like we had in Vietnam. And we've talked on this program about the new proposed prison down at San Diego that would be next to a large airport. We have to be alert ahead of the building of these things, the planning stages, to see if they anticipate moving large masses of population, like the Dallas Air Force that was just built this year. So there's a proposed large airport like that at the San Diego border, and you have this electronic battlefield, and you have a large prison for $86 million removed from families that could visit the prisoners. You have to write again to congressmen and ask what is happening along these lines. It goes into the construction of black boxes that see through walls that can follow men a mile away. These are things being used in the United States now, night vision devices that scan entire blocks, and several million dollars were spent in Brooklyn for a 60-mile stretch where they have 24-hour surveillance of everybody on the street. Now, Delaware has received federal money for a 24-hour service of civilian trucks, and men in uniform go by as dry cleaners and salesmen and public utilities and get in the neighborhoods, and they actually work for the secret police, the government. Gestapo is what I call it, the secret police. Now, this is important because I'm going to talk about two automobile accidents that were fatal just recently. One was Clay Shaw, a defendant that Jim Garrison had arrested as part of the Kennedy conspiracy, and Murray Chotiner in Washington, D.C. Both men were hit by trucks, and they both died of blood clots a short time later. There's a new disease in the country. It's called blood clot following automobile accident by truck by persons. The one in Washington, D.C. that ran into China happens to be employed by the government. So if you see civilian trucks, dry cleaners, salesmen, public utilities, it may be your tax money to the tune of $2 billion, and they're actually spies in your neighborhood. When Mr. Martinez was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, he'd already done 300 jobs for the CIA, and he had on him a pass, a cook's union pass, so he could be in a kitchen, he could be poisoning food, he could be part of a conspiracy or assassination like Mr. Gindross in the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was murdered. You have to be very leery of people on when you take airplane food or particular restaurants if they have cook's unions, passes, and aliases handed out by the intelligence agency. You may say, well, who can you trust in your neighborhood who's driving a truck delivering to your house? Not very many people if you don't get this existing administration like the past out of office. That's my personal feeling. The article in Playboy goes into crime predicting computers, x-rays to examine your body without your having any knowledge, hidden lie detector boxes that stress your voices. Those are worn by policemen in San Francisco, the police department. X-rays that look into your letters and packages without breaking the seals. Now, this is going on. $2 billion of our tax dollars for the war to come home. These are a few of the weapons. They have what they call a shack baton, which is an electronic prod, stun guns that knock you down with pellets. And the article refers to Dr. Delgado, who I also have mentioned in the Realist article, with his electrode implants in the body. And the article in the Realist that I did is about Nazi doctors and Nazis. The article begins, my article, with chronology of events with bringing over persons from Nazi Germany who have affected our culture. And in this article in the Playboy, they have mentioned Dr. Ralph Schwitzgebel from Harvard University, who is the expert in the electronic stimulation of the brain and believes that wires should be implanted to control actions and control people's behavior by radio signals. There's a quotation in there by one gentleman in the Playboy article. It says, the once human being thus controlled would be the electrical engineer's cheapest of machines to create and operate. Now, coming out at this time, it's very important, I think, if you want to read my article in The Realist on the SLA, to buy the Playboy article or borrow it or copy it from friends and Xerox it where you work and make copies and write to congressmen and see what I'm trying to stress in those 39 pages that I've done on the creation of the SLA and read the other article in the Playboy. The Playboy article goes into the 84 units, the maximum psychiatric diagnostic unit at Vacaville, and that's where Donald DeFries was getting his special medical attentions before he became the field marshal sin cue of the SLA. It goes into the Senate subcommittee investigating America, their files of 25 million people and 760,000 organizations. And we talked about that several weeks ago, the Defense Security Agency, a new group in the controller's office, the military plumbers that is similar to the White House plumbers, only more vicious and worse, and set up by Melvin Laird, who chose Gerald Ford for our president, escalated him into that position, and he believes in running this secret kind of an operation in the Pentagon away from the White House. It's important, if you want to back up, you don't have the footnotes yet to the Realist article, but I suggest you get the Playboy article, Bringing the War Home by David M. Rorvick, because he barely briefs on five pages the problems of the prisons, of Vacaville, the weapons, and so forth, that I'm trying to make the point that that is what the SLA is about, to escalate the use of these weapons. Now, to back up the article, because after you all read it, and I assume you'll get a hold of one soon, you'll see the news each week falling into place with the things that I contend will be happening in the future. And, of course, this last weekend, there's that mystery bomber, Mr. Racism, who held up the Greyhound station. The week before, there was an agent provocateur, a man who was on the assassination hit squad for the U.S. Army, who held up the people at Griffith Park, stopped the Gulf games, the children on the merry-go-round. That was a provocateur, police provocateur violence. That new Mr. Racism, if you save the articles, and I'm not going to do much on the show this week, I'll do it next week. It's tied into Mr. Hagen, the public relations man for the police department who brought in the cameras to film the SLA cremation. It will have to do the aliens they refer to are the anti-Castro Cuban group or the Palestinians funded by the CIA. We're going to get agent provocateurs kicking up a big storm in Southern California, which is a perfectly natural place because that's where the agents were going to create violence for martial law in 1972. They have the money set up, the CIA operatives, and you'll find the Greyhound stations were put out. A lecture of a minister last week, Reverend Ike, had 18,000 people. They put security there, which they didn't have to do. The Watt Summer Festival had 200 extra police. 1,000 policemen were sent to the Greyhound stations, and persons were taken off buses, and all the luggage lockers now at the airports will be open. There's an excuse. You see, if you plant one bomb in a locker at Pan Am and kill three people, then you can examine everybody's luggage who ever travels on an airplane again if you want to do it. So that sets the tone. The provocateurs can set that. 3 million people were waiting in Los Angeles, according to the Los Angeles Times, for bombs to go off, not knowing where it would hit next. This is the kind of terror, the flock that's going to continue off the SLA with the same funding, the same agencies, the same police departments. And this bomber's biography, I guarantee you, sight unseen, the police are looking for him. It will follow the profile of the loner, the misfit, former mental patient. I know the script now that the police department, CIA, uses. Meanwhile, they have 1,000 extra police at one place, 1,000 at another, and everybody is in a state of terror. The Watts Festival has police, the Greyhound stations, the public parks, the golf games are stopped, and the city will come to a standstill. Also in the Realist article, because I'll be quoting it a lot now, on the cover page, on the bottom paragraph, I talk about the SLA, CIA, and I said these planned acts of violence will include chemical warfare, and I said that not just as a scare tactic, because there is evidence of the paramilitary extreme right going into chemical warfare in order to gain a martial law in this country. Friday, August the 16th, San Francisco Chronicle, that's just 3 days ago, threat to gas the U.S. Capitol. A group called the Aliens of America threatened to release nerve gas on Washington, D.C. So this is not only in Los Angeles, but it'll be transported from St. Louis. It'll be fired from 8 cannons. It will destroy the entire personnel of Capitol Hill. Get ready. I wouldn't be surprised if these things didn't happen, because I predict, if we don't stop it, that the Capitol will be moved to Texas, and it will no longer be Washington, D.C. if the nerve gas is sent to the Capitol. I have reason to believe that the headquarters of the United States could easily be moved down to the Houston-Dallas area of the United States if the Washington, D.C. area were wiped out by nerve gas. And all the Army dossiers on the 23 million people are kept in the Southwest. The Southwest, they were told to destroy these things. They are kept by the military. They weren't destroyed. And it would be very easy to eliminate the Washington contingent and go through with this nerve gas threat, just like this bomber is threatening to go through the other areas. In the meanwhile, look how many policemen have to be looking for this man and stopping the activity on the streets of a city where 3 million people live. All of this could have been stopped if we had gone into the Lewis Tagwood allegations 3 years ago about the police department, if we had opened up the Robert Kennedy assassination, because the teams that affected power by losing one candidate in 63 through murder and assassination are active, with many agent provocateurs in Los Angeles area, and California is ripe for this kind of terrorism nestled here, because the agents were ready for the conventions and they can escalate now with the terror. Well, we're going into the news now. That's enough on my article, the SLA. I want you to get the Playboy article. 5 events happened in the news and they were all important. We have 25 minutes. Maybe I'll do 5 minutes to each one. 5 very important things happened this week since we met last week in Dialogue Conspiracy. In the first place, Richard Nixon resigned, and we had Gerald Ford for 1 week as a president. The important thing to remember, if you read the tapes when Richard Nixon resigned, and I went at great length about them last week on the radio show, the thing that brought Nixon down from grace, he fell from grace, was he was a selected patsy who fell down out of the presidency protecting the Central Intelligence Agency operations. And it was very important, the June 23rd tapes in the White House in 1972 were protecting the Mexico City connections. And I hope some of you have pencils, because we'll be talking about this like a course, referring to it many, many times. I've done it in the past. I'll do it in the future. The White House tapes were saving the Mexico City connections that involved money from the CIA, the Cuban group that were involved in the Bay of Pigs, and the whole this team was tied into the murder of John F. Kennedy. Those are the June 23rd tapes. What Richard Nixon fell down for, what he held on to the last, the most important thing he held on, had nothing to do with entering the Democratic headquarters at all. The reason he called the CIA, they suggested John Ehrlichman call the CIA, who would call Mr. Walters, who would call Patrick Gray of the FBI, who would tell the agents of the FBI to cut it off at the point where the seven men arrested with the Watergate, that was it, had to do with Mexico City, the anti-Castro Cubans, and this is a link to the John Kennedy assassination in which all of the major people involved were involved 10 years earlier. Linked to that was the Jack Anderson article this week about Gordon Novell. Many of you might have read the article and didn't make any connections. Jack Anderson's article, August 15, said, Mission Impossible, a plot by Gordon Novell. Gordon Novell was brought into the White House by Charles Colson, who tried, because they wanted a way to erase the White House tapes that I'm telling you about. And Gordon Novell was referred to as an electronics expert from the industrial, he's an industrial research consultant. And the plan for Novell was to go to El Paso, Texas, where he met Jack Prentice, whose name also comes up in the Kennedy assassination. A lot of my work isn't indexed because I did it all myself in 10 years, but I'll find the name Jack Prentice for you. He goes to Jack Prentice and he's to get a ray gun, a gigantic magnetic pulse, and the suggestion was to bring it to the White House. They went to an Alan Bell, president of Dechter Counterintelligence, to get this ray gun and stand outside the White House and erase the tapes, these important tapes that Richard Nixon didn't want revealed, the ones that brought him down. Now, if you read the name Novell, you may wonder who this man was that was brought to the White House. They didn't use these tapes. They didn't erase them because the tapes still existed to bring Nixon down, but they were afraid they'd erase other conversations with Russian and Chinese agents. They'd erase everything that was locked up. So they didn't use the plan, but the point is Novell was there. Gordon Novell is the man that Jim Garrison wanted to arrest at the time he arrested Clay Shaw as being part of the John Kennedy assassination. Gordon Novell's from the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was in the White House 10 years later helping the team that he worked with. He worked with Clay Shaw, who Garrison arrested. Novell worked out of 3900 East Broad Street, Columbus, Ohio. That's the Defense Industrial Security Command. Their headquarters are also in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and the old Redstone Arsenal in Alabama, in Huntsville, Alabama. Novell was his cover for the Central Intelligence Agency is Double Check. It was called the Double Check Corporation that was funded by the Permandex Foreman Foundation. I don't want to confuse you in these names. If you saw the movie Parallax View, it was taken after the Permandex Corporation, which is a Swiss corporation. And CIA agent Gordon Novell worked through the Double Check. That was the agency that gave him his check, his weekly checks, his pay money. And Gordon Novell is an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency that Jim Garrison wanted to arrest for his part in the John Kennedy assassination, but he fled to Ohio where they refused to extradite him. The governor of Ohio didn't extradite him for questioning or trial. Now, Novell knew the man who he helped impersonate Lee Harvey Oswald. He knew the whole team that was involved with the Kennedy assassination, David Ferry, Clay Shaw, and I'll give you some other names. Novell's role, one of them was to impersonate Lee Harvey Oswald. He fabricated evidence against Oswald. He was a dead ringer for Lee Harvey Oswald. He was in Texas, Mexico, Dallas, and Fort Worth 6 weeks prior to the assassination. And the old buddy, part of the secret team, is at the White House 10 years later with Charles Colson, trying to erase the money of the Mexican money in which Nobel was part of that operation, and all of them, including Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, were a part of that. Now, in addition to Gordon Novell's name surfacing this week, the very same day that his name surfaced as being at the White House 10 years later, Clay Shaw expired. And as I say, he had what I call the Murray-Chotiner-Robert Crown disease. Robert Crown was an assemblyman in California who had the deciding vote in the death penalty, who was jogging one morning and expired because a car ran into him. This is the Murray-Chotiner disease. He would have testified on the Vesco case. He was the important witness in the Vesco case who would have changed the jury's decision maybe on John Mitchell. Recently, he was brought to trial at Murray's stands. This was very important to have Murray-Chotiner as a witness, but he expired conveniently prior to the trial. Well, Clay Shaw died. He was run over by a car in February, and he died of a blood clot this week. And it's very important that to say that Clay Shaw expired the same week that Novell is surfacing in Washington, because one is helping erase the evidence of the connection of E. Howard Hunt, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, Lee Oswald in Mexico City, linking it to the Richard Nixon administration. There was a team there that had been working for 10 years, and Clay Shaw was one of the top operatives of this team. He helped bring over the Nazis from Germany, Mr. von Braun and Reinhard Gehlen. He was working with Alan Dulles in the military. In Europe, Clay Shaw was on the board of directors of Permandex, the Swiss corporation that I mentioned before. It has five fronts that were behind the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Another man on the board of directors of Permandex with Clay Shaw is E.M. Bloomfield. He's still alive. He lives in Montreal, and he helped fund the money flowing from Montreal to Mexico, where E. Howard Hunt was the CIA case officer, down to the Grand Bahamas. Another board of director of Permandex was Clint Murchison of Dallas, and it was at the home of Clint Murchison the night before Kennedy was killed, where J. Edgar Hoover was and Richard Nixon. And Penn Jones Jr. from Midlothian, Texas, alleges that somebody he knows was at that home where the plans were set for the murder of John Kennedy the next day. Three members of the board of Permandex Corporation were at the home of Mr. Murchison. There was Mr. Murchison, Mr. Bloomfield. We had Richard Nixon, J. Edgar Hoover, Murchison at the home. Bloomfield wasn't there that night. I have no way of knowing. I don't think he was. His headquarters in Montreal, that's where the second Oswald and David Ferry traveled back and forth. And we know the route in the Martin Luther King of James Earl Ray in Canada and the aliases that were provided for him and clothing and safe houses and so forth. So this week, with the Richard Nixon tapes coming out, those June 23rd, 1972 tapes coming out that have to do, and I'll reword some of those, reread it to you again today, that had to do with the Cubans, the Mexican links, Howard Hunt being in Mexico, working with David Ferry, Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw died this week. It was very timely that he died. Another member of the secret team is dead. That makes about 99 if you add them up in the last 10 years. Now, E. Howard Hunt's notebook was taken from the White House, and this is another important event. Information was taken from his desk, and there was a leak that Rockefeller was hiring mobs for the Democratic Convention in 1972. My first Realist article goes into the hiring of goon squads by the Republican Party to cause violence at both conventions, the Democratic and the Republican Convention. And, of course, Gerald Ford is ignoring this and saying Rockefeller is still considered a candidate for vice president. And Rockefeller is saying, I never sent money down to Miami. I only give it to New York. Well, all you have to do in New York is to give it to Jack Caulfield, and he can spend it in Miami. I'm not saying that's the way it happened, but there's so many agents in New York City. G. Gordon Liddy lived in New York, so all the Rockefeller money would have to do would be to give it to Liddy. And he was planning to kidnap radicals at the Democratic Convention, the Republic, and give them acid and poison. So Rockefeller is safely removed. If he says, I didn't fund violence at the Democratic Conventions, all he had to give it to was one man in New York. And there were plenty in New York, including John Mitchell from New York. And Mitchell was good enough. He was sitting down in Florida planning violence for the conventions. So we know that because money is given in New York, it doesn't mean it's earmarked for anything in New York City at all. John Mitchell and Liddy were New Yorkers, and they had plenty of eyes on violence. But the important thing is that E. Howard Hunt belongs to the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I try to speak of the split in the government. Carl Oglesby in Boston refers to it as the Cowboys and Yankees. I refer to it as the Hughes faction, the aerospace, the white racist, if you can give it a generality term, as against the mafia, the Italian, the Jewish, and also combined with the Eastern Seaboard, the Rockefeller faction fighting with the Southwest. There's this inter-department fight going on, which is important, and I'll show you how the evidence on the criminal conspiracies of the assassinations isn't going to come down from the liberals. It isn't going to come down from the radicals. It's coming down from the in members, not only killing each other, but squealing for their own safety. Because in the news this week, one of the members that works with these secret teams is squealing and pouring out evidence now of all things on the Robert Kennedy assassination. The next 10 years are going to be very interesting in terms of analyzing our news, because in conjunction with a lot of violence and riots or terrorism, we're going to have a lot of people pinpointing problem areas that are taking place in terms of the political assassination, people that were part of it, people surfacing who want to tell the truth, who will surface quickly maybe to get protection from the law enforcement if they finger the other person. So we're going to get more of this during the year, and I believe these political assassinations may blow open very quickly in the next few years, because seeing the Watergate people removed from grace, the people involved in the political assassinations may not want that same thing to happen to them. Depending on the punishment that's meted out with the Watergate, if the president gets off, if all of his men get amnesty, then the murderers, the conspirators, the people that cover it up, will continue to cover up. But if the others get stiff penalties or get some punishment, they'll surface in exchange for not giving the punishment. But the important thing about the allegations that this particular gentleman was making, he's an arch conservative, and he was making allegations about Rockefeller being linked, say, to the mafia or being linked to hiring goon squads at the convention. The important thing was that these things were in the desk of E. Howard Hunt. And E. Howard Hunt belongs to the extreme right-wing faction of the American government, the Buckley, Ashbrook, Agnew used to be one of their men until he fell from grace. And they don't want a vice president as liberal, if you can believe that, as Rockefeller. So they have all the ammunition to knock out every so-called a liberal. I don't think of Rockefeller as anything but a fascist, and his control of the banking situations, the oil deals he makes. There's a lot of things, what he did at Attica to the men there. I think of him as a war criminal, shooting these people down. I have no respect for Rockefeller, but a lot of people in this country think of him as a leftist. So the point is that E. Howard Hunt in the White House, still, he's a defendant in the Watergate. He's still in his desks, had things removed for safekeeping in files that would spring like time bombs to make sure that the Rockefeller faction didn't get in the White House. If Agnew was pulled out, they made sure that Mitchell was a fall guy and that any other Rockefeller people would be fall guys, and I predict that Kissinger will fall from grace very shortly, too. But the point is that E. Howard Hunt's secret papers were very carefully taken out of the White House. The story is that they were taken by some man who got access to them. It only could be the Central Intelligence Agency, because you just don't walk into the White House, get into a desk of E. Howard Hunt's, and walk out with papers and say, I'm a friend. A criminal case is being investigated. And just like the CIA went to the home of James McCord and burned every typewriter ribbon and lost their traces behind them, they picked up these desks, loads of stuff of E. Howard Hunt's. So like time bombs, they can discredit Rockefeller, and the excuse is we don't want another Eagleton affair. So what you're getting is the discrediting a Rockefeller, trying to knock him out. I don't mind if he's knocked out as the vice president. I can't think of anything that would be worse. But the other faction is loaded with ammunition to put on anyone that is the slightest bit liberal or not taking a far-right military stance that the Pentagon wants. So this is the power that E. Howard Hunt has in his desk, even though he was arrested at the Watergate. He has these time bombs, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of a vice president Gerald Ford appoints and if he lives through his term. If it doesn't please the Pentagon, will that vice president live through his term? Or is the Pentagon going to choose the vice president again, like they've selected Gerald Ford for us, and they've selected the other president since 1960 after Kennedy was killed? Now, in the struggle going on between the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Pentagon, and the CIA, because I do make those two blocks. I think the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon want to take over the White House and the CIA faction. There's always a counterfight. There's a fighting back. And wouldn't you know that little old Martha Mitchell, I suspect her of having her finger in a little turn of events this week, which she's not going to take lightly, even though John and Martha parted company. She knows that her husband was he took the rap. He was the scapegoat for the whole White House thing and was kicked out. And as a result of it, that broke up their home. So Martha had a visit. I don't know whether this is what caused it or not, but Martha had a visit behind closed doors with Henry Rothblatt, the attorney in New York City. If those of you who don't remember the name, Henry Rothblatt was the former attorney for the four Cubans arrested at the Watergate Hotel for Mr. Barker and Sturgis and Martinez and Gonzalez. And when the men pleaded guilty, he left the case because he didn't think they should plead guilty to this particular case. And Henry Rothblatt has co-authored some books, interesting books. One was with F. Lee Bailey, a CIA attorney, on called Court Martial, and he did one, it was on Robin Moore. And this book, Court Martial, was on the Green Berets. He works with Robin Moore, alias Robert Lowell Moore, who also wrote The French Connection, and who is knowledgeable in the international drug traffic. We're getting into a very high power struggle here between the international drug traffic, the Hughes connections, the Vesco, and the Rockefeller faction, and they're fighting it out. So to counteract this fighting back and forth, Rothblatt, who's knowledgeable about this and who works with Robert Lowell Moore, and Moore just came out with a book, The Fifth Estate, which goes into the power of the drug people and the Hughes connections, the Hughes-Vesco connections. Allegedly, he's concerned about their power. Henry Rothblatt came out yesterday on a UPI story that the Sirhan case should be opened up. Sirhan. Now, it's very interesting that this man, who's knowledgeable in all government conspiracies, or at least on the periphery, he may not have the ballistic or photographic or autopsy evidence on some of this, but he's knowledgeable that these were conspiracies. Now he's going into the actual evidence, and Henry Rothblatt comes out as of this last week, August 18th, and he said that the Sirhan case should be opened up, and he mentions the fact of the position of Sirhan and that couldn't have killed Robert Kennedy. He goes into the ballistic information, and he said we need an objective panel, nationally known people of forensic science and medicine and so forth, to examine the Robert Kennedy murder. Well, this is an interesting point because coming from New York, author, lawyer Rothblatt and his author friend and the team that he works with know a lot of what happened in the Robert Kennedy case, and I say that if it were opened up, we'd go into the Las Vegas crowd, the funding at the racetrack at Corona Del Mar, the hiring of Sirhan as a patsy, use money in selecting a president of the United States. There's evidence that all of this is linked in the $500,000 that B.B. Rebozo handed out to Hubert Humphrey after Robert Kennedy was killed, and there was another $500,000 to Richard Nixon, and there was money paid to the Robert Kennedy group, and Larry O'Brien then got a very high-paid job with the Hughes organization or corporation. A good investigative team taking leads that I have, that other researchers have around the country, wouldn't have any trouble now putting it all together and giving any member of Congress the full support to go ahead, that the evidence exists right down the line that Sirhan Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy. Now, I know that these little tigers, they're like the tigers in Black Sambo, fighting each other and hopefully melting away someday and destroying each other. These contingencies are understood by the power structure. They don't take that sitting back. And that's why in my article in The Realist on why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped, I named the man. Again, his name is Rangel. His alias is Zatko, who was hired by the White House, allegedly by Richard Nixon and E. Howard Hunt, to murder Sirhan Sirhan. You see, with Sirhan dead, he couldn't be a witness at a new opening of a trial, and the people would say the case is closed. Like when Oswald was dead, the assumption was that the case was closed. So the contingency was there and is there to murder Sirhan at San Quentin Prison, where he is, and he has to be guarded very carefully. I got a letter or call today from a family out at Soledad Prison. You know, that's a prison that's just about 30 miles from Carmel, California, and the lives of men there are in danger. Certain people in O-Wing, a family called me, and I've told them to see their lawyer and call the warden there and Mr. Stone and call the head of the O-Wing and file suits, have them ready at a lawyer's office claiming a murder charge against anybody. This time it's Wilson again, Larry Wilson, whose life is in danger. These men know too much about Donald DeFries. When you read the article I did on the SLA, you'll see why there's so many murders taking place at San Quentin and at Tracy and Folsom and Soledad Prison. The men are too knowledgeable about the prison conspiracies and conspiracies taking place on the outside, and the prison is obliging by either killing them for their knowledge of narcotic traffic that the drugs are in, or conspiracies against certain people that have been placed there as victims of larger conspiracies that we talk about. On one of my shows on KLRB, and several of them, I've told the men, if your life is in danger, writing to me, write to your lawyer and let him send the information to me, because when they write to their families, the letters are open. And there was a Supreme Court decision which came down just a few weeks ago that the news media people cannot go into the prisons. Not necessarily. Not all of them are stopped, but certain people are stopped because they said there's no reason for them to come in. The family can't visit, so the media shouldn't come in. But the Supreme Court said the prisoner does have the right to send out letters, and he has written to, if he writes to his family, those letters are open and read, so that prisoner knows that by the time the family gets that letter, he would be dead. But if they write to the lawyer, they have the right, the privacy of the client lawyer to tell what's happening, that their life is in danger. So I received a letter from a prisoner this week at Soledad Prison, and this is what he wrote to me. This counteracts a Supreme Court decision or trying to save the lives of these men who are knowledgeable of these conspiracies. He said, there is a new procedure here. We can no longer seal outgoing legal and public official mail, but have it brought to the mail sergeant, who, after making sure it is such mail, seals and submits to the mailroom for mailing. Incoming mail is opened by the same personnel in front of the addressee then given. No one can send such mail certified either. They are supposed to use a fluoroscope for this mail instead of opening it, and the sergeant had told me the fluoroscope here has been operative for a month now, and it is apparently Procunier's intent. Mr. Raymond Procunier is the head of the Department of Corrections. Now, the important thing is to keep Sirhan alive if this other case is going to open, to keep prisoners alive in all of the prisons all around the country. I have no special ones to single out. But I want to show you how insidious, because if their lives are in danger and they take the mailroom, then the particular guard who threatened them knows that the man is squealing, because if a guard comes and says to Wilson, I'm going to kill you, and Wilson runs and sends a certified letter or a letter to his lawyer, then they know that Wilson's squealing. So then they're sure to get him before the letter gets out or find out that he is carrying a message, which is very bad. And there is no privacy to stop these conspiracies unless we take some action in forms of letters. Well, this was a big week with Clayshaw dying and finding out Novell was in the White House, that the secret team still is very much alive, squealing on each other and murdering each other. I hope the truth comes out in some way, even if they have to do it to each other. It comes out faster that way. As a matter of fact, Well, take it easy and try to get the realest they are locally, the Thunderbird, the airport, and you can write to me if you can't get one in your local community and read it. Let me know what you think of it. And if you want the bibliography, I'll be sending them to you. Take it easy, and I'll see you next week in Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.